A very good morning to you, church family. This Sunday, we are in Ruth. We are in the Old Testament. And I don't know if I've shared this with you, but let me tell you how I ended up in Ruth and how we all end up in Ruth. On the 2nd of June, our firstborn son turned us into mother-in-law and father-in-law. So I decided to go into the Bible to see what God has to say in terms of advice for mothers-in-law, because I wanted some advice and the way to go, because I do not want to be a monster-in-law. So God led me to the book of Ruth, where we have Naomi, who is a mother-in-law, and she's got two daughters-in-law. And as I started to read the book of Ruth, God led me to write a Bible study on the book of Ruth. And so I'm busy writing this Bible study on the book of Ruth. But as I was going into the book of Ruth, I realized that book is not just about mother-in-law and daughters-in-law. The reason why the book of Ruth is in the Bible is because it speaks to us all and to all our situations. And that's how we find ourselves today in the book of Ruth. So Ruth chapter 1, we're going to read the first 5 verses. Ruth chapter 1 and the first 5 verses. So here's what the word of the Lord is saying to us. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. So a man from Bethlehem in Judah, together with his wife and two sons, went to live a while in the country of Moab. The man's name was Elimelech, his wife's name was Naomi, and the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephratites from Bethlehem, Judah, and they went to Moab and lived there. So at first, as I read this story, what came to my mind, well, let's read the rest of it first. Now Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with her two sons. They married Moabite women, one named Orpah and the other Ruth. After they had lived there about 10 years, both Mahlon and Chilion also died, and Naomi was left without her two sons and without her husband. This is the word of the Lord to God's people. This weekend, by the end of this last week, Pastor Paul and I were feeling really tired. And so because we're feeling really tired, he suggested, let's watch a movie and just relax our minds. So I thought, great idea. You find us a movie. So he found us a movie, and we decided we'd just zone out and get distracted by just sitting and watching a movie. So we started watching the movie, and at first, it looked very interesting, but 5 minutes later, so much bad had happened in that movie. So I said to him, this is an intense movie. This is too much. What's wrong with this? It was actually a Tyler Perry movie. And I said, what's wrong with Tyler Perry? Does he have to be so dramatic? Does he have to create such drama? In 5 minutes, so much has happened that is so bad. And then I said to him, you know what? I used to teach literature. And I know that when writers write their books, even when they write books for movies, what happens is they set up a scene, they set up a situation that appears normal, or a normal family, and they introduce each member of the family gradually, and that's what most movies will show you. And then something bad happens, so there's some normality first, then something bad happens, and the bad thing reaches a climax, and then a Superman comes in, or the police, or somebody to rescue, or the chief star of the show then steps in and rescues the situation, and then everything goes down again. Now that's a normal movie. Now I was saying to my husband, this is an abnormal movie. 5 minutes, all the bad stuff has happened in 5 minutes. So I'm saying to him, so where's the climax? We start with the climax, what else is going to happen? Well, then he reminded me This is the reality that most people live in, even here in Zimbabwe. Even here in this church, many of us are living in that situation where bad things are happening to you, bad things are happening to good people, and so we sat there and figured, let's see what happens. Well, very interesting, I'll tell you later what happens. But this is exactly what happens in the book of Ruth. So you go to the book of Ruth, I say, Lord, I want to learn how to be a mother-in-law, and God takes me to the book of Ruth, and I read in the book of Ruth, from verse 1 to 5, so much bad has happened. And by the time I get to verse 5, I feel a little bit overwhelmed, like, whoa, this is too much. And if you look closely, you see in verse 1, there's a normal family, a family of believers, a man who loves God, Elimelech, and his wife, and his sons. But in verse 1, a famine hits. Drought, hunger hits in the place of where, in the place of Bethlehem, the place where now we look at and we admire, but in that time, in the place of Bethlehem, so at all levels for that family, the famine hits. Now, many of you who are younger will not know what happens when there's a drought, because when there was a drought in the country, in Zimbabwe, many years ago, there was a serious drought. But you were too young, you're probably still babies, and you have no idea. What happens is that when there's a drought in a country, it affects all levels of the country, all levels of family life, so that in the end, you feel like you've been hit from all sides. So this is exactly what happened to this family, to the point where now they all had to move from their land of origin, from their land of birth, move to another land, to a foreign land. So the first bad thing that happens is a famine hits. The next thing, bad thing that happens is they now have to move to foreign territory. Now for many of you, when you move to foreign territory, like you go to the West, or you go to New Zealand, or you go to America, you see it as a good thing. In their case, they were the chosen people of God, the Israelites, the people that were loved by God, but the famine hits, they now have to move to foreign lands where they don't worship God, where there's a lot of debauchery and idolatry and disobedience and all the bad stuff. They need to now move from a place that is good, a place that is godly, to a place that is foreign. And in those days, unfamiliar territory that was so foreign meant really discomfort. So famine hits, they move to a foreign territory, but what you also need to know is it's enemy territory. So if you read up the history, they move from Bethlehem, they go to Moab, but Moab was no ordinary place. Moab was enemies with Israel, so there was war and conflict, and they had fought before. They were still at war, they were still in conflict, and there was still hostility. So they are now moving into enemy territory. It's something, you know, Zimbabweans have no idea about those types of relations, because when you look at Africa, we are one of those countries that's lucky enough never to have been fighting with our neighbors. Many countries like the DRC and Rwanda are at war, and Sudan and South Sudan are at war, and Nigeria and other countries are at war. But we have been so fortunate, we've not been at war with our neighbors. So the closest I can think of is the xenophobia that happens in South Africa, the hatred of fellow Africans that happens in South Africa. So imagine you yourself moving into an area of South Africa where they hate fellow Africans like yourself and hate Zimbabweans, and they beat them up and they burn their homes, they burn their houses, and they burn their businesses. So now you have to move into that neighborhood in South Africa. This is the type of person, this type of place that they were moving to. So they were now moving to enemy territory. But just when you think that this is just a few verses and things are going to get better, the next verse tells us that they lived there for 10 years and the husband dies. So they've moved for better, for food, but in an enemy territory, in a foreign territory. On top of that, the husband dies, and this is no small thing, because the husband was the protector and the provider of the family. Much like today, a husband is a protector and a provider. But when I say that, some of the young generations roll their eyes, and they're thinking, not in these days. So I'll say a husband is supposed to be a protector and a provider. But then he goes and dies. So Naomi is now left with her two sons, and then you think, okay, so the two sons she's left with, and then the next verse says, the two sons also died. So now she doesn't have a husband or a protector. She doesn't even have her two sons, because in those days when you were left with as a widow, you could be protected and provided for by your sons. But now they are gone. So now she's got zero protection, zero sons. She's in enemy territory. She's in foreign land. And all she has are two foreign daughters-in-law. And in that setting, you could almost feel her saying, well, what good is that? Because these two daughters-in-law don't even know her culture, don't even know how to look after her according to her culture. And no wonder when she wants to go back to Zimbabwe, she now says to these two, perhaps South African girls, you girls stay behind, I'm going back home. Because everything has fallen apart. But just when you think that's the worst, in verse 5, because verse 5 says the sons also die, so now she's left with zero husband, zero sons, it occurred to me that she's also left with zero grandchildren. So these two girls didn't even have children. So what happens is that what is expected is that even though her sons die, she would at least have their children, her grandchildren, that she could perhaps take with her back to Zimbabwe and look at them and say, oh, well, I've got my grandchildren with me. But in this case, there's not even the kids. So in those five verses, I'm thinking, this is too much. This is like the Tyler Perry movie that we were watching the other day. Five verses, everything has gone wrong. And then God says to me, this is exactly what life is like for many of us, that sometimes you feel like life is a setup. You feel like you have been set up, and you look at your situation, you look at the conditions on this side and on that side, left, right, and center, and you see that you've been set up, you can't move forward, you can't go backwards, you can't go sideways, you can't move, you have been set up, and you're in a situation that feels like you're spiraling and going down in the mud, and you're being swallowed in the mud. So in the end, this Naomi ended up saying, my new name is Mara, which means bitterness, because the Lord has allowed bitterness to come upon me. So what is happening is that she's suffering. She has gone through loss. She's now totally disillusioned, which is exactly what some of us go through in life because of the situations. But I don't want the story to end there. Because what God is showing us is that sometimes God chooses this type of plot where a lot of bad things are happening. But I want to say to us this morning, this is only the beginning. God is up to something. God is about to turn things around. God is about to do something new. And this is why we only have this stuff in the first five verses. Then the rest of the story, the rest of the chapters unfolds, and you see the goodness of God, and more of the goodness of God, and more of the goodness of God, until in the end, you have a big smile by the time you finish reading the book of Ruth. So there's a bad setup. But it reminds me of drafts. My father used to love to play drafts. You know the game of drafts? And so when you're playing the game of drafts, if you're very good, you can set someone up. Now I want to say to you, when you're playing the great game of drafts, your enemy, and in our case, the devil is our enemy. The enemy can set us up and move and take your peace, The next move, take your peace. The next move, take your peace. So that in the end, you look at the board. Sometimes it's even a chess game. You look at the board. All your pieces have been taken. You have very few pieces left. Actually, sometimes you have only half the pieces left. And the enemy has most of the pieces left. And now you're staring at the board. And you don't know what move to make. Now, if you're playing drafts as in championships, and if you're playing chess in championships, they even have a timer, because sometimes you don't know what to move to make. You can sit there for an hour and just stare at the board with zero moves to make. So they have to have a timer so that after a few seconds, you must make a move. Now, I'm talking about this because sometimes the devil has made the moves and has taken our pieces, and it's now your time to move, and you don't know how to move. But God comes in because God knows exactly what pieces to move. And the moves that I used to hate is when a person takes your pieces, not just one piece, but they go cha, 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 bob. You know Bobo? So now they take two or three of your pieces, and on top of that, they have a Bobo. And that's exactly what the Lord will do. The Lord will see the situation where it looks like you've been set up for failure, you've been set up for disappointment, and you've been set up that you will experience disillusionment and loss all the time. And you feel like my life is a bit doomed, or my life will never heal. The things that happened to me in the past, will I ever get over them? And then God will step in and move for you. Cha, cha, cha. So that in the end, you will come out victorious. You will come out from the person who was bitter like Mara, the person who was bitter like Naomi, and God will put you into a better place. From the place where you were poor, and God will now put you into a positioned place. Because God is exactly, that's exactly what God did for Naomi. And how? Because God is the God of reversals, the God of great reversals. Now you look at Bethlehem, it was the land of, it was called the house of bread. That's the meaning of the word Bethlehem. It means house of bread. But that house of bread was turned into a house of hunger because of the famine. But when God steps in and God makes his moves, Bethlehem to this day is the most popular town in Christendom. It's the most popular town that even our Sunday school children know, because it is the town that was elevated and became the town where the Son of God was born. And to this day we sing songs about Bethlehem, because this is exactly what God does. When God makes his moves in your life, God will elevate what used to be the land of hunger. You look at Ruth, the foreigner. Now, I want you to understand that nowadays, when you marry a foreigner, it's fascinating. People say, oh, interesting, you've married a Mozambican. Oh, you've married a whatever, whoever you've married. But in those days, the children of God, the people of Israel, were not allowed to intermarry with foreigners, because that would dilute them and dilute their holiness. So it was a negative thing to have foreign daughter-in-law. So to have a foreign daughter-in-law following you back to Bethlehem was not a positive thing. People would look at her and think, so what's she about? Does she even know God? She's not one of the chosen people. But when God makes his move, this Ruth, who was a foreigner, falls in love with Boaz. They start creating a lineage, and it is in that lineage that Jesus is born. Ruth, the foreigner, becomes the great-great-great-great-great-grandmother of Jesus Christ. So many of you may feel like I'm a foreigner in my situation. I feel like I'm a foreigner in my family. I feel like I'm a foreigner in my workplace. I don't feel at home. I don't feel comfortable at all. And God says, that is fine. I'm going to use your foreignness, and I'm going to create something good. And the something good that came out of it is Jesus Christ, from the line of Ruth, who was a foreigner. Boaz was a descendant of a prostitute. Did we know that? So we admire Boaz, and we say he became the kinsman redeemer, and he took Ruth, and he was so kind, and from kindness he fell in love with her, and from love they got married, and we admire him. But he was a descendant of a prostitute. I won't even say the name in Shona, because in Shona it sounds like a swear word. So he's a descendant of a prostitute, and her name was Rahab. You know Rahab, the prostitute? That's the line of Boaz. That's where he. That's the line that he comes from. And some of us come from that line where our background is not so great. Maybe even your mother was the prostitute. Maybe it is your grandmother who wasn't so straight. Maybe it is your father who was an alcoholic. Maybe it is your grandfather who was a criminal. I actually come from a lineage of criminals because my great-great-grandfather ran away from South Africa in the apartheid days. You know how they used to run away from South Africa? And when they ran away from South Africa, my particular grandfather ran away from murder. He murdered someone, because that's what they used to do out there in South Africa, murdering each other. And so as they were doing all that murder, some of them used to run west. They used to run up and west, and they ended up somewhere in the Bulawayo area. Others went up and east, and they ended up here in Manicaland, especially in Chipinge. And that is exactly where I hail from. My mother hails from Chipinge, and they changed names, and we became the Sitoles. But originally, we're not the Sitoles. We are the Hlatshwayos from South Africa. My great-grandpa was a criminal, but look where I am today. I am preaching the word of God, and yet I am the granddaughter of a criminal. Because that's exactly what the Lord does when God makes his move. You will reach a bobo. No ordinary grandchildren. So Naomi may have thought, well, I don't even have grandkids. Now I'm going back. I mean, you know, we are so fickle-minded, we people. So our son recently got married. And so one day they said to us, we've got news for you. And we thought, all right. You know us, we love that kind of news from married people. So they said, we've got news. So we said, great. It was a video call. So it was my son who was saying, we've got good news. So we said, okay, share. And he said, okay, let me go. So he was moving from room to room, looking for something. And we thought he's looking for his wife, Megan, so that they can make a great big announcement. So he's moving with the camera from room to room, and then he zooms in, and it turns out it's a new cat. We didn't even know how to react. Because you can't say, and they said, this is our new cat. His name is Tiger. Please say hi to Tiger. And here we were, Paul and I saying, hi, Tiger. But that's because we're fickle-minded. Number one, it's not our family. It's not our business. When they're having babies, and even if they want to have babies, it's none of our business, and we should keep out of their business. So we were being fickle-minded, and they showed us and straightened us up that your very first grandkid is a grandcat. So Naomi may have moved from Moab, going back and thinking, I don't even have grandkids to show for my going. But God had a plan. And let me tell you what the plan of God was. God was making it so that Naomi would have the great, great, great grandkid who was the Son of God. Jesus Christ. It is from that line that Jesus Christ came. So Jesus Christ was no ordinary grandchild. Jesus Christ now becomes the Savior of the world. And here you are. Here you are. Here I am. We have been saved, not by an ordinary grandchild that she could have cried for, but by the Son of God. So I'm here to say to you, you may be disillusioned. Things may not have gone the way that you want, but do not give up. God knows how to make the best moves. so that the best moves become the moves that you didn't even understand, and God will make good out of bad. Because God is able to do that. God makes the move because you are chosen. God has chosen you. Chosen by name. Because God is faithful. Because it's God's nature to be faithful. Not in your style, not in your way, but in God's way. And because of newness, God says, see, I am doing a new thing. Do you see it? Do you perceive it? And what we need to do is to open our eyes and see the thing that God is doing, not the thing that we are expecting. Because the thing that God is doing is even bigger and greater and better, but we might not understand it now. But I want to assure you, God is doing a new thing. So whenever you feel you've been set up, and then some of you may even think, I feel like I'm set up in a marriage. I feel like this marriage is going nowhere. It's not a fulfilling marriage. Yes, you may have felt set up, because the truth is, you don't know someone until you live with them, right? That's when you realize he leaves his socks where he took them off. I'm not saying anyone's name. And then you're thinking, but I didn't sign up for picking up anybody's socks. But the thing is, God is up to something, because God knows you've got your own bad habits. And he's probably looking at you and thinking, why does she do what she does? But God knows that the two of you together, when you decide to work together, when you decide to be stronger together, you might actually produce a lot of good for the society, in spite of your bad habits. And so when you have felt set up, when you have felt that bad things have been happening to you, that's only the beginning. That's the beginning of the story. God is about to make some moves, and you are about to be put in a better place. In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen.